Welcome to the New Books Network.
And we are live. Hello to the wonderful Laura Bauer.
Hi, Mel.
And I know that we are live.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, well, you know what? Save the thanks till the end of the show and then see if you still want to thank me. But
perfect.
It's great.
Oh,
it's great.
Really?
It's great to be interviewing somebody I've actually met in the flesh. And we were at a conference together last year in New York. SCBWI, you flew in from Westchester and I flew in from Israel. And and you told me—
Not quite as far.
You told me that you had a book deal. Actually, you have a two-book deal.
Yep.
And a year and 3 months have passed. And we're here to celebrate. So show us—
Yay,
your wonderful—
it's
your
here.
Wonderful book, which is so beautifully named, The Imposter.
Thank
a few,
you.
A few words about The Imposter.
Okay, yes, this is The Imposter, and it was illustrated by the amazing Carissa Green. And Carissa did such a— I can't even tell you how amazing I felt when I saw the book for the first time, because she just got it. And she just like nailed all the details, and she is so detail oriented and professional. And I loved all the little funny, you know, humorous things that she put in. And she did like some amazing things I didn't even have in the text. So for example, I don't have how Mr. Snuggles is found. I don't have that. And so she decided to interpret it, the dog. She puts a dog into the story, and then the dog finds Mr. Snuggles, which is such a fun detail. At the schools when I go, the kids love seeing the dog come, and Mr. Snuggles is in the dog's mouth with the bow tie all ripped. So she was amazing to work with.
So we have lots to talk about. I love this book. My granddaughter also had an imposter, a similar but different story, and I read it and I chuckled all the way through. It's brilliant. It's your debut—
oh, thank you—
picture book, and congratulations. It is really lovely.
I appreciate that.
And I've also had Sandra Sutter, the owner and publisher of Gnome Road, on the show. And I know from personal experience that she chooses one manuscript in several thousand, and she's chosen two of yours. So kudos to you.
Amazing.
Laura. It is incredible.
Thank you.
So tell us about your life and how you got into Kidlit, and then we'll start to talk about your journey in finding this wonderful publisher.
Sure. So I started doing classes and taking writing seriously, I would say.
No, Laura, no, hold on. We want to go back. I was born.
All the way back.
Yeah.
Okay. I was born on Long Island in New York, and I would say I've always been interested in writing and a writer. I have stacks and stacks of diaries that actually my kids have just discovered and think it's hilarious about all the details that I thought were important in my life that I was writing down. So they give me a little bit of a hard time for that. But
at what age did you have the diaries?
I was probably 7 through college. Yeah. So, and really my closet is filled with them. So, so I've been doing, and I still journal. Like, it's just something that is just like a release for me. So, I still love doing that. I remember entering my first, poetry contest. I think I was in third grade, and I entered my first poetry contest, and I remember I got an honorable mention, but it was like the best day, and I was so happy. My love of rhyme, I think, really started then. And The Imposter, my first book, is not in rhyme, but that's like the language I feel in my heart. Like, I think a lot of times in rhyme. And I remember when I entered that contest, I was like, oh, this could be, you know, this could be something. You don't know at that time. I was only 8, but it was something that from then, I remember just being like absolutely in love with writing. So
I don't want to jump ahead. Actually, I do, because in 20 minutes, you're going to tell me that you started to write when your kids were little, and you started reading books to them. But, you know, I have my theory, Laura. And my theory is
Okay.
that people who write for 5-year-olds are 5-year-olds. Are you a 5-year-old?
Yeah. I think I'm definitely a kid at heart for sure. Like I don't know. I teach at a preschool. I teach 2-year-olds, so I'm around them constantly. And I just think that, it's a good way to. Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, it's live. I just think that's, something I've always gravitated towards. Remember, when I was a kid, I would be that, child playing with my dollhouse and playing mom, and I would have my dolls, and it's something I always wanted to have my own kids, and my jobs were always like centered around them. I was like a camp
But you,
counselor.
okay, but you studied something called management and leadership at
Yeah, I was a
college.
leadership major at the
What
University of Richmond, and
Laura,
I know.
is leadership? How do you get a bachelor's degree in leadership?
know. Yeah, it's actually a very unique program. I did that in communications, but Richmond's actually one of the few schools that have this leadership program. And it was actually amazing, the courses that we took. It was like you study actually leaders in history, you study current leaders, you talk about the characteristics and traits that are necessary to become a good leader. It was very hands-on, a lot of projects that we worked on, really analyzing, texts, and then also analyzing real-world situations. So I loved it. I thought it was great and it was very unique. But I did a dual major with communications too.
And then you worked in PR for 10 years.
I did. Yeah, I worked at a PR firm in the city for 10 years, and I started out
Also,
as an intern there.
writing a copy.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, a lot of press releases and byline articles, and yeah, a lot of writing. And I represented some fun clients too. I represented the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That was one of my clients.
Wow.
Yeah, but I also did. I had office furniture manufacturers, and I had financial clients. So I had a huge gamut of clients. But I did get to work on some really fun projects and do some really fun writing, creative writing too.
Okay, and then what happened?
And then I had my first child, my oldest. And then I was thinking about going back, and it was a hard decision. But once I had her, I just decided I was going to stay home. And then, yeah, what you said, I mean, with your first child, I was reading her picture book after picture book after picture book. You don't quite have the same amount of time to do that with your subsequent kids. But for my oldest, it
Because
was just, I remember laying on
they're imposters.
the bed. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they didn't quite get the same amount of reading, but they got plenty. But yeah, I would just read stacks and
Laura,
stacks of books
did you
to
have a
aid her.
moment where you said, I can do this, or was it something that built up from the time you were a kid?
I think it was something that was building up. And I remember, I don't know if you remember this, but I was feeding my daughter at the time a lot of Cheerios. So, and on the back of the Cheerios box, there was a spoonful of stories contest. And it was basically you can write a manuscript, send it in, and then there will be a chance to be published. And that was like the first time I had ever heard about something like that, where someone, just someone regular like me could like write a story. I mean, I really knew nothing about like the whole path to being an author. So that was like my first thing that I saw that I said, oh my gosh, like that is something that maybe I could do and try. I think I ended up not submitting, or maybe I submitted, but I never heard back. But after that, it was like I started to like work on stories a little bit when I had time. But I had my three
So
kids pretty close
you're
together. So.
Laura, we could say that you're a serial writer. Oh
I'm
yeah.
a total serial writer. Yes.
Sorry, I
I
had to.
love it.
Yeah, go ahead. So you had
No,
your kids.
I love it too. So yes, so I have my three kids kind of close together. So there wasn't a ton of time. So once my son, who's my baby, got to be 2, and he was starting to go to a little bit more school, and I had like a couple hours to myself, that's when I really decided that, you know, I'm going to really work on this and focus on this. And so I started taking classes. I took my first class was in Westchester with Amalia Hoffman, the awesome author and illustrator.
Whom I've
And
interviewed several times. Hi, Amalia.
amazing. So that,
Wonderful.
yeah, that actually was so amazing to me and like such a breakthrough. So the first class was at the local high school, but then the second class, she invited a group of writers into her house. And so I got to go to her house and she did the class from her house. And I just thought that was the most amazing thing. She had her artwork and her awesome books all around. And it was so inspiring. And that really got me going.
Okay, and then what happened?
Let's see. So that was 2016. And then I fell into the trap of like, you know, probably sending out my work before it was ready. I worked on a bunch of stories, but I didn't really have as many as you need to be, you know, polished and ready to send out. So I definitely did fell into that trap. I kept plugging away. COVID was a little tough, just in terms of, you know, there was some definitely some breaks in there with, you know, the kids all being home and having to be, you know, their teacher part-time and, you know, make sure they're on all those their Zooms. And so it was a little bit challenging, but I would say I really like picked up after that, and then I started to focus more on writing more and more stories that were ready. Obviously, I have critique groups, which have been so instrumental to getting my stories ready to go. And then, in 2020, I was submitting, and then I connected with Sandra actually at an SCBWI conference. Melissa Stoller, who you know, who introduced you and I, and she introduced me to Sandra. I call her the great connector. She's amazing. She just knows so many people.
Hi,
So
Melissa.
she introduced me. Yeah, hi, Melissa.
I call her
She
Mel,
introduced
by the
me
way.
to you. Okay, well, that may, yeah, Mel and Mel. That's perfect. That could be a book.
Yeah. It actually,
So,
I'm working on one. Shh. Ah, we just
okay, I would tell
spoiled
her.
everything. Okay. She's not the other Mel, but that's okay. Yeah.
Okay. So, she had introduced me to Sandra at the conference. And then when Sandra opened up Gnome Road, I decided to submit to her. And so she then decided she was going to do The Imposter. And then also my second book that I have coming out in September, Emily Snook, The World's Smallest Cook. So I'm super, you know, grateful to her for believing in me and taking a chance on my stories.
Her Gnome Road's books are lovely. Sandra is wonderful. I suggest that people go back and listen to our interview back in November. I don't always get to interview a publisher who, you know, owns her own publishing house. And she's incredible. And she accepts one in 1,000, one in a few thousand. She opens up briefly each year and gets a deluge of books. And she published two of yours. So, and that's without an agent. So we'll talk about agents in a minute, but you had a two-book deal with a wonderful publisher, small but wonderful. And how did it feel
I have to
to
say,
be?
for working on it for so long and just really trying you know, my hand at this, it felt amazing. It really did.
Laura,
Just to know that, you know,
you didn't work that long. You know, some
you don't think?
people, no, you started in 2016 and you have a book
Seriously, but
out.
like
That's
2010 is when I like started thinking about it. So that's a pretty
okay.
decent
In
amount of
that
time.
case, it's okay.
Yeah. Okay. You give me a
So
few more
one
years.
of the things, most American publishers, this isn't the
Yes.
same in all places. They dissociate the author usually from the illustration side. So they might ask you, do you like the illustrator? And you'll say yes or no. And if they want to, they'll pick the illustrator anyway. And you very rarely see the artwork. And you've given your baby for adoption and you're just hoping you'll like it. What happened with you? Did you see the illustrations? Did you speak to the illustrator? What happened here?
Yes. So Actually, with Sandra, she had sent over some potential illustrators, which I think is amazing too, as you said, so you don't always get the chance to see potential artwork. So I definitely felt involved in the process from the beginning, which was amazing. And so she sent over probably, five or six illustrators and their different styles. And I just gravitated towards Carissa's work right away. Actually, it's funny. A lot of people have said, I've never met Carissa. We've gone back and forth on email, but a lot of people have said that this Olive, who's the main character, looks like my middle daughter, Stella. So, and Carissa has never seen my kids or anything, but it's just funny. It's just like I really resonated with her artwork on so many levels. And so I was like thrilled that when she said yes. And yeah, she's just been like a absolute dream to work with. And then even afterwards, she shares her information and her files. And we've gone back and forth on email. I saw her briefly on a Zoom, and I told her she doesn't live close by, but I said I wish she did because it would be really fun to do some events together.
But did you see the pictures while it was happening, or Sandra said, here, have a look at the art?
Yeah, she sent me, so I saw her portfolio, but then she also sent me in the beginning, she sent me this whole like very professional character sketch. And so it was a character sketch of Olive, and it was a character sketch of Mr. Snuggles and Mr. Huggles, and it was awesome. It was just like she had a couple different versions, but the one that I saw was the one that she ended up going with in the book, which looks like these characters today. And I love the really cool thing about Mr. Snuggles that I love is that she made it an animal that wasn't, it's not clearly like one certain animal. It's not like a bear, it's not a puppy. She kind of made it nondescript because she said she really wanted kids to be able to relate to that stuffed animal and take their own personal experiences with their loveys and then relate to it by making it something that's not clearly one thing. So I thought that was really smart. And I love it. I love the animal. It's so cute. Oh, I have them here. I have the big versions.
Yes, this is the time to show the actual Mr. Snuggles and Mr. Huggles
Okay.
in real life for
Yes.
all the people watching.
So I have Mr.
The rest of you
Mr.
just
Snuggles.
run out and buy Laura's wonderful book.
Oh, thanks.
That's Mr.
So Mr.
Snuggles.
Snuggles, he's the old one. He has a tattered bow tie and his nose
Yes.
is worn and he's got the band-aid. I felt a little crazy because I had to I was trying to make it look a little dirty, so I was outside with like a stick and some mud and like rubbing it on the stuffed animal. If anyone walked by, it would be a little strange. But
Little weird,
anyway,
yeah.
it's Mr. Snuggles. Yeah, a little weird. And then this is the imposter. So he's fluffier. The company I worked with, Budsies, was amazing. They put more stuffing in this one, and this one has less because when the loveys get worn, they start getting thinner and thinner. He has a fresh bow tie. And actually, one thing that's been really cool, the school visits, this is how much kids pay attention to detail. So in the book, one of the details is Mr. Snuggles has, and Mr. Huggles, they have a tiny, perfect heart on its
That's right.
neck. And
Yes.
I don't have it. So I actually just ordered them and I'm going to sew them on this week because the kids are like, well, where's the heart? And I'm like, you're absolutely right. They need to have a heart. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to work on that. But
Laura,
yeah, these are.
now's a perfect time to open the book and show us some of the spreads and read us because
Sure.
I'm guessing that it's way under 500 words. The text is condensed and lyrical and lovely and funny, and the book is so heartwarming. Read us a little bit of it.
Sure. And should I tell a little bit about it first, or should I just go into?
I
What do you
don't know.
think?
What do you want to tell? Your kids had the
Well, just
loveys and they lost them and they found them. Go ahead, tell us.
the end. No, just Olive is the main character in the story, and she has this very special stuffed animal, Mr. Snuggles, who's down here. And she loses him one day, and she gets a replacement. One mysteriously appears, and that's the imposter, who's all fresh and shiny and new. And the book is definitely about Olive's journey to accept the imposter in her life and open her heart and make room for more. She eventually does find Mr. Snuggles, but she realizes that She wants them both in her life. So, and then, yeah, so this is just a little bit of the book.
I love the end papers too. Read us a little.
Oh, I do too. Okay, sure. Yep. End papers are awesome. So there was one thing Olive loved more than anything else in the world. No, not olives, although they shared a name. Not the super duper looper or even Grandma Rose's costume box. It was Mr. Snuggles. Cuddly, reliable, perfect. Mr. Snuggles was an excellent game player, listened to all of Olive's stories, and always made her feel better. So when
what's that, Laura? This is so perfect. This is so perfect. Yep. Mr. Snuggles, cuddly, reliable, perfect. It's gorgeous. Like a page with six words and so poignant. Keep going, dear.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And always made her feel better. So when he went missing one day, no, I can't go on. And we definitely have these moments at my house for sure. There was no time to waste. Olive searched all the usual spots, the pantry, her backpack, and the bathtub.
And then she hires her brother.
Yep, hires her brother. He's the detective, and he finds everything she ever lost except Mr. Snuggles. So there's this big pile, a lot of people can relate to.
Two questions now. This is gorgeous. Don't give away too much. We want people to buy the book. So two questions. Was there like a moment when you said, oh, because we've all had this experience, and you know, very often it takes a really clever person like you to turn this into a story. So was there a moment that you said, wow, this is a story? Do you remember how it happened? Very often we don't remember how the idea came to be.
Yeah, I think it was like a culmination of things, but I do remember one thing that really stood out. We were, I was talking to one of my kids, and they were just like ranking people or, you know, things in their life that they love the most. And they were doing like a rank order. And I looked at their list expecting like mom and dad to be right on top, and their stuffed animal, number one slot, number one position, mom and dad. We were somewhere on there. I think maybe four or five, but no, the stuffed animal was number one. And I was like, this is so powerful, because to me and my kids and having this experience, they were absolutely 100% family members. They are part of our family. We take them everywhere. We shouldn't, which is why we lose them all the time, but they should stay in their beds, but they don't. They have to go on vacation with us. They have to go everywhere.
Otherwise, they're going to have FOMO.
Exactly. They have to be there. Yeah, totally. So that's just, it was like all those moments. And then like when my dog one time ate my daughter's stuffed animal, and I really thought that the world might end for her. I mean, it was a moment I'll just remember. She was down on the ground like Olive, and it was really, really powerful. And I'm like, wow, stuffed animals are so important to kids and what they can do for them, the comforting aspects. You know, it's just, it helps them. It really does. Like for bedtime, it helps them go to sleep. And it's just, you know, when they're scared or anxious or anything, it's just a comfort. So just seeing those things, and how many times we've had to get the loveys back and do rescue missions all around town.
Laura, you know, like I'm in Israel now. We're in the middle of a horrific war. I think I should have a Mr. Snuggles.
I think you need one.
Yeah. Why can't adults have a Mr. Snuggles?
They can actually. And you know what's coming out about this book, which is funny. I've been hearing more and more from adults that they're like, don't tell anyone, but I have one too. I think a lot of people do. Really? I think a lot of adults do. My kids gave me a stuffed animal that I sometimes sleep with too. And they, you know, it was very sweet. They thought I really would want this stuffed animal, and it's adorable because it's a bulldog and I love bulldogs. And so I have it. And actually I brought a stuffed animal to college with me. So I was
Oy vey, everybody. You got a stuffed animal in college. And you still got married and had a life and a family, and
I did. And I met
that's
my
wonderful.
husband in college. So,
Yeah, but does he
yeah,
know?
I know.
Does he know about the stuffed
He
animal?
did.
Where is the stuffed
He
animal
did.
now? Where is it now?
It's actually, I bring it to school visits. It's in the house. I bring it to school visits because it's all like ripped and torn and stained, and it's not. I don't sleep with it anymore.
Now, okay, this is too much information, but this is from your childhood?
A
Wow.
childhood bear, bedtime bear.
Don't tell my daughter because she's mad at us now because we didn't save her teddy bear.
Oh, I know.
How
I have
terrible.
heard stories like that too.
So and in addition to wonderful writing, there's something else, and I don't know whether this is to your credit, but the name of the book is brilliant.
Oh,
And
thank you.
how do you get a perfect title for a book that's two words long and the first word is the? So how did the name come to you?
The name actually just like popped into my head because we've had those situations where we have had to buy other stuffed animals that weren't the original when they were lost, and the disdain that the kids looked at this thing with, the replacement with, was unbelievable. I mean, and it just that word popped into my head. It was like total, like, don't even bring this near me. I don't want this.
But did you get any friction? Like, did Sandra say anything? Because imposter is not a word that kids use. It's a word that adults use.
Totally. Sandra didn't. She actually was on board from the beginning with it, but I did get pushback in some of my critique groups. They thought it was like too, as you said, like too adult of a word, or not quite kid friendly. I had some awesome suggestions, but I just felt that I love when I'm writing to teach kids new words. And I don't shy away from using bigger words in my manuscripts. This book, actually, if you look throughout the text, it does have some bigger words. And I think that's great because then kids latch onto it and then they start to learn, through the context what the word is about. And in Emily Snook, there's some bigger words too. So I definitely don't shy away from that. So I was really happy that Sandra was on board. I've actually come to find out through my school visits, like when I've asked, I'm like, so who knows what an imposter is? And everyone's raising their hand. I'm like, wow, these are K through two. This is amazing. But there's apparently a video game Among Us where this is one of the, there's an imposter character. So I think a lot of them know it from that. Yeah, because they're all like, oh, he's a bad guy. And I was like, well, yeah, I mean, in this book, it's not a bad guy, but a lot of them have that text already. So it's interesting. But just hearing, 4-year-olds say the imposter, that word is like super adorable.
And so I when I heard about the book and I hadn't read it yet, you say the imposter, a picture book for
Yeah.
4-year-old, 5-year-old kids.
Right. Right.
Oy vey, oy vey,
Right.
what was she thinking? But it's the perfect name and it's intriguing. And together with the gorgeous cover, kids are going and parents are going to want to buy this book. And also it's so poignant and true to life. I don't want to
Thank
ask you
you.
about your new book, Emily Snook, the World's Smallest Cook. Unless you want to just share, I mean, I applaud you on choosing Emily for the name of the main character, but just a few words.
I know you have an Emily too in your book.
And I said, "Oh,
I
I'm going to
remember we
pick a
talked.
name that nobody else is going to use, right?" Well, we talked about this in New York, right?
We did. We did. It's a good name.
It is. So, just a few words about the book. We don't want to give it away. It comes out in the fall.
Sure. Yep. It comes out in September, and it's about a little cook named Emily Snook, and she enters an international cooking competition. But she is much smaller and much younger than the rest of the contestants. And so it's about the big challenges she faces in that competition. And one of the things I love about it is that her sous chef is her grandpa. And
Yeah.
so he's with her and he's supporting her and he's taught her what she knows. And they're an awesome duo. So
I love books like that.
thank you.
And at the end, we're going to go and come back, and I'll tell you my sad story of my book that I can't get right. the grandfather and a grandson. Maybe you can help me with this. But I love these cooking books with the kids and the grandparents, and I can't wait to see that one. So, you know what I'm going to ask you now?
Nope.
I'm going to ask you why such a talented girl like you doesn't have an agent.
Oh, I'm working on it. I'm working on it.
Yeah, because I mean, it should be a done deal with these two books.
Oh, thank you. It's hard. It's hard to get an agent.
It
It's hard. There's a lot of talented, super talented people out there. It's competitive. So,
I'm predicting that you'll have an
but
agent
yeah.
soon with your talent.
Oh, thanks, Mel. Thank you.
So you
I
are trying to
appreciate
find
that.
an agent. You're not like one of those people who says agents majent.
Yes. No way. No
And you have
way.
lots of other
No.
polished
Yes.
manuscripts to pitch.
Yes,
So
now I do. Yes. Yes, I
so
have
do
lots of
you
stories. Yeah.
so so it's great to be able to interview you like at this milestone, this juncture. And there's nothing like having a the book in your hands and going to tell children about it and seeing it in stores. What is your advice for the authors in the trenches who don't have traditional publishing deals, don't have agents, and what light can you shed on your process? On your process?
Sure.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Process. Either
Yeah.
one.
No, I'm looking for a better word, but I didn't find one yet.
I feel like I have a lot. Oh, I see.
Shoot.
Yeah, I feel like I have a lot of advice, but one of the things I think is to definitely, is this for people that are just starting out? Because it would be my advice would be different. But if you're just starting out, just to
Here,
take
one
the
second,
classes.
Laura, we don't know who's listening. There are published authors who are
Okay.
listening. There are butchers who backed into their meat grinders and got a little behind in their orders. It's a terrible joke. There's all kinds of people listening. We don't know who is listening or watching.
Right.
But among the
Okay. All
thousands
right.
of people
So,
listening and watching
okay.
are people who are on this trajectory.
Yes.
And you can give advice to every one of them.
Right.
I
Yeah, I
even
would.
give advice to the butcher, you know, be
Sure.
careful with
Well, I
your,
would
yeah.
be careful of the meat grinder. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would definitely say invest in yourself. Take the classes that you're able to take, enter the contests that you're able to do, kind of do any opportunity that you see, take advantage of, because there's so many connections and small moments that happen through, some of the writing contests that I've done, that I've connected with amazing people, and the classes that I've taken, the conferences that I went to, just meeting awesome people like yourself, and just being able to network and really open yourself up. Yes. Open yourself up to all the opportunities because there's a lot. I mean, the writing industry is amazing. How many resources? It actually can be a little overwhelming, and you kind of have to pick and choose. But the breadth of like classes and the depth of classes that they have. And resources and things online and blogs and podcasts. I mean, it's such like an exciting industry to be part of, but and there's so much to take advantage of, so definitely take advantage and keep going. It's just, it can be very easy to get frustrated, but I feel like believing in yourself, like a little Ted Lasso, and believing in yourself and knowing that, like for me, definitely the rejections over the years was really hard, but at the end of the day, like I love the writing aspect of it. I love the writing element of it. It makes me happy. I carve out time every single day. I teach in the morning and then I come home and I carve out as much time as I can before I get my kids to do it because it brings me joy. And makes me happy. And I think those that can also make really powerful stories when you're writing, those stories that only you can tell. Like I feel like that happened with the imposter and other people. You were saying it's universal, but I do feel like I had such a personal stake in that story, and it flew out of me. I mean, my first draft, sometimes it's like, crumpled up pieces of paper or deletions on the computer. And it takes a while to get it down, but for this one, it absolutely flew
Laura,
out
one
of me because
second.
I
So
have that personal
said
connection.
something really important, okay? It's a very common it's a common occurrence where kids lose their teddy bears and stuff, and his parents and grandparents who wouldn't get them a an imposter. But because of what you said right now, because of your emotional investment in the story, you were able to carve out this sculpture as uniquely as you did. So you've taken a story. Many stories are things that that are everyday stories, but then the author, takes them into his or her heart or their heart and turns them into something unique. And I think that's what you've done.
Thank you. Yeah, I feel like the personal connection to it was a different process for me with the story because I wrote it just so much quicker. And in terms of the revisions, there wasn't like the major massive overhaul revisions that my stuff usually goes through. So, because it was my story to tell for this one. Like it happened to me and my kids, so it just came out a lot easier. There was revision. I'm not gonna say there wasn't revision, but it wasn't like the extensive revision.
You can almost tell when you read it. We're towards the end of our wonderful conversation. The one last thing I wanted to ask you is, so you had this cheerio moment. It's not only that you're saying to people, enter contests, the cheerio box, which I think there's another story here. Or waiting for you to write. Because when I was a kid, we had Trix, and I don't know if we had Cheerios and all kinds of things, and there were sometimes surprises at the bottom. And if you sent the flap, or a reasonable facsimile, I don't know why they had that word. Like I knew what a facsimile meant when I was six because of the cereal boxes. A reasonable one, a reasonable facsimile. I don't know why that is, but I've never seen a story about the magic inside the cereal box, and you had real magic in this cereal story. I'm going to venture, and you might disagree with me, but I don't care, that your story about Emily Stook, which I haven't even seen, somehow is connected to that primordial contest of yours with the cereal box. That she enters, she's young and she enters a contest.
It probably does. Everything's interrelated, right? And it's like lies in
Yeah.
your subconscious, maybe.
So I can't
Maybe
wait for
that
that
was.
one. I can't wait for that one to come out in the fall. And is there
Thank you. I'm excited.
anything I haven't asked you?
I think we covered a lot.
We covered a ton of stuff.
I think so. This is great. I so enjoyed speaking with you, and I was so happy that we got to meet last year. And thank you
Yeah.
for taking the
And
time to have me.
look what happened. Your magical book came out, and it really is a
I
magical
know.
book. And I wish you lots of luck,
Thank you.
and Sandra also for her excellent choices. I'm going to probably
Yeah,
end up
big shout out to
interviewing
Sandra.
more and more of her authors. Laura Bauer, thank you very much. I had so much fun. I forgot to introduce the show. So I am Mel Rosenberg, and I'm the host of the children's, like 43 minutes into the show, I'm introducing myself. I'm Mel Rosenberg, and I'm the host of the Children's Literature Channel of the New Books Network. And I've been here with the wonderful Laura Bauer, celebrating her debut picture book with Gnome Road Publishing, entitled The Imposter. And everybody run out and buy this book. And Laura, we're going to leave and come back, and I'll just share a few words with you and to say goodbye to everybody else. It's been
Okay.
wonderful. Thanks so much. Bye, everybody else.
Bye. Thank you.